Well, it's good to be with you today. I've heard a lot about your church over the last year or so since I joined the team at Berkeley College. Manny's right that for 30 years I was a pastor in Southern California, Rose Drive Friends Church. And a little less than a year ago, we moved to Haviland, Kansas, and joined the team there at Berkeley, both as a vice president of academics, overseeing all the academic programs, but even more specifically, directing the Master of Arts in Transformational Leadership program. And it was really under that heading that I had the opportunity to interact with Manny during this last year as one of his professors for a particular class, and a few folks from here in Iowa and specifically at this church were able to come out to Haviland not that long ago, just a few weeks ago, for a church multiplication conference where we brought people from all across the country, from both coasts, intersecting there in Haviland and talking about multiplication. And it was a tremendous beginning. We hoped for 30 to 40 people. We had 100 show up for this conference of people who are interested in the vision of seeing the Friends Church continue to have an impact in new and fresh ways throughout our country. I mean, we're concerned about international missions. We're concerned about reaching the world for Christ, but also we don't want to ignore the United States of America. And it hasn't been since the late 19th century that the Friends Church has experienced a multiplication movement. And so there are people today, what I can tell you, evangelically minded Friends Churches today who are praying about and concerned about the spread of the gospel, winning people to Christ, fulfilling the Great Commission, and doing our part through the Friends Church to do that here in this country. And I would say that conference, it's a beginning. It's far from an ending. It's really a beginning point. And we're planning on doing the same thing next year, inviting even more people. And so some of you who were in attendance this last May would invite you to come back again and look ahead to next May to even perhaps bring some others along with you. It's an exciting adventure to be a part of. As is just being a part of the adventure of following Christ and building bridges, making connections. This weekend, today and tomorrow morning, this theme that we've been talking about, really this room is very fitting. You guys have lived and eaten and talked and fellowshiped in this room a lot, and I don't know which ones of you were a part of the committee that chose this little border, whatever you call this. It's not wallpaper. What do you call that? Okay. We'll call it the border. Yes. But hey, great selection of a choice. This is a great bridge room that you have, and so it's so fitting for us to be talking about building bridges to change the world. It's a metaphor that you're going to hear a lot about over the course of these hours this morning, a little bit this afternoon, and tomorrow morning as well. And we'll jump into that here in just a few moments. First, just a little bit more about me, and then I'm going to give you a chance to introduce yourself. I know you all know each other, but I don't know you very well. So first, a little bit more about me, if this works. Oh, I advanced too far. This is my family, and the two that moved to Kansas with me, oh, I can use this thing. My wife Janine and our daughter Joy, she's 14. These are three boys, Jason, Jonathan, and Jared. Jason is on staff at Azusa Pacific University, an assistant campus pastor there. Jonathan graduated with his teaching credential from APU and Cal State Fullerton and is currently teaching in the inner city in Los Angeles. And Jared is just finished his freshman year at Azusa Pacific. Jason is married to Stephanie. They've been married just for years, and this is their first son, our first grandchild. And here's the interesting thing. He really is that cute. It's not just a trick photography thing. This is Elijah James. And so we kind of like that name too. I go by Jim, but James was my given name. And so Anyway, that's really fun for us and our family to have a new grandbaby, our first. What we're going to be talking about, though, over the next minutes is the priority of bridge building and specifically thinking about this place. To get to this, though, I want to give you a chance, just very quickly. We don't have time for really long stories here. But very briefly, I'm going to ask you to share your name, how long you've been a part of this congregation. Actually, I have two other questions. Why you're here, and one thing you like about Pastor Manny. Okay? All right. No, he has to stay here, and you have... So it's name how long you've been here at this church, why you are here this morning, and one thing you like about Manny. And you have to be quick. I mean, this is like the 30-second testimony thing, okay? Not the 3-minute or the 5. So we're going to start. You knew we were going to start with you, right? You just kind of figured. Yeah, okay. This is the hardest thing you're going to do all weekend, so. Why you're here this morning.
To see what can be done, where I might fit in. And the thing about Manny is how well, means I've got high school kids, how well he interacts with the kids.
Great. Thank you. Will.
Joe Phelps. I've been here 26, 27 years. Met my wife, and, well, my girlfriend turned into my wife, and that's how I got here.
Just checking with her just now?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good.
I came because I heard they had really good food this noon.
Great.
Just to learn. And see, the old man, he's a very loving person.
Hmm. All right. Good. Thank you, Joe.
My name is Brett Rogers, and I've been here 15, 17, something like that, 15 years. And I came this morning to learn more about building bridges.
Hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. That's good to know. Okay.
Manny's not sure he knows it either. He's embellishing.
My name is Daniel Phelps. I've been here for my whole life, basically, and came here to learn about ministry and building bridges and stuff.
Hmm.
One thing I like about Pastor Manny is he's very caring, very thoughtful.
You got in an extra.
Oh, better than nothing.
That's right. That's good. Okay. Charlene. I heard a Macy. Connected?
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry, did you say Jill?
Joe.
Joe, okay.
My boyfriend became my husband.
Ah. Who cares about it all, but yeah, I got you. I'm tracking with you. All right. Ah.
Hmm.
Okay, then. I didn't know you loved cats so much. That's so great to know that. All right. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Thank you, Kay. And Isaac.
Isaac, good. Just here to learn and see what God has done for us in the next few years. I value that he has normal guy type of personality, and people welcome, and just that Quaker spirit of everybody is a minister.
Well, thank you for helping me today, too. And John. Good. Thank you, John. Okay, this one's going to be tough for you, Manny. But Ali, if you want to leave off the answer to the last question, we're just going to assume that you like yourself. We don't really want to know if you don't. So, okay? So, but you can answer the first three. Fair enough.
From day one, they've been family, they've welcomed the same. Here with us, they're thick and thin, so we're in this thing together.
That's good. And that is what it takes. It's past. I mean, you all know this. Pastor doesn't do it alone. In fact, even it's that you do it together, or you don't do it. You do it together, or it doesn't work. And so that's really great. Okay. To move on. Great. Thank you, Rick. And he had to go someplace else to find. I got that.
Actually, I've been here 26 years.
Oh, well. Good. Thank you, Laura. Now let's go over here.
My 63 years. I'm here to learn and support the church today. And what I like about Manny is his sincerity.
Great. Thank you, Ray. Ray, right? Thank you. And Mike.
Mike Martin. More or less my whole life here. Short step in Marshalltown, Marshall Friends Church, but back here. I'm here really to learn. Always be open to new ideas and ways of getting things done. And Manny's enthusiasm.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. And back here. Might as well say it. I mean, put it right out there.
My sister's not around, your sister's not around, so I feel like we're sisters. So. And Brianne's wealth of knowledge.
You said it's Brianne. Only been called that 100 times.
Yeah.
100,000, yeah, I'm sure. Okay. Brianne.
Okay.
Okay, I know this is tough for you answering this, but it's okay. We'll give you permission to say whatever you'd like to. So that's appropriate for, you know. Okay, there you go. You say she lies? Is that what you say? Oh, right. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
And
yeah, when you get toward the end, it's kind of tough. I know you have to dig out, you know, the bottom of the barrel. So. Oh, okay.
And it makes me tear up just thinking about it. But for me, I think, you know, along with all those other things, one of the most important things is how I see him interact with his kids.
Hmm. Thank you, Margaret. Thank you. And it's Chris, right? Okay. I have a sister, Christy, but I call her Chris, so... Well, Christine, that's my sister too, actually. Full name Christine, everybody else call her Christy. I call her Chris, so. It's a good name. I like that.
I'm Diane Teske. I've been here 38 years. I'm here today to
And what is your position here that he supports? Ah. So he's happy, thrilled that you get to... He's supporting you to support him. That's what I'm hearing. Excellent. Diane, you understand that you are one of the most powerful people in the congregation. I just want to, in front of, you know, everyone, I just want to acknowledge that, and on behalf of everyone, I want to thank you for being in that role. Oh, that's great. Pardon me? Yes, well, yeah. And whether you do it to her face or not, we all know. We all know. So. That's great. Hey, well, thank you for sharing just this little bit, and hope that's kind of fun for you too. And you know, I mean, there actually is reason. I know we're not here. This isn't the Praise Manny Day, but the reality is sharing. Yeah, actually, it would help you to fill out this headset a little bit better. You know, if we can grow that. But no, the reality is, it's one of the great things. One of the signs of a healthy church is a healthy relationship between the congregation and the leaders and the pastor, and the love flowing both ways, and having opportunity. It's one of those things. It's like with our kids, you know. It's so easy we catch them doing stuff wrong. We need to remember to try to catch them doing stuff right, and how valuable and important it is as parents to praise and build up our kids, and translate that to all of our other relationships within your family, husband, wife, within a congregation, those of you who are involved in leadership teams together, just within the church family, sharing praise, encouraging each other, all those kind of things are just really helpful, important, lifeblood, vital kinds of stuff. So thank you for indulging me in doing that little part. Hope that was fun for you as well. Well, talking about building bridges, I know that a number of you have already been thinking about some of these things. Manny has shared with me that some of you have been exposed to this book by Robert Lewis, The Church of Irresistible Influence. In fact, just to help me to know, how many of you are familiar with that book or have read at least a little bit of it? The Church of Irresistible Influence, a couple of you. How many of you have ever heard that word, building bridges, those two words together, in the context of this church? Okay, perfect. So some of you at least have a little bit of a background concept to some of the ideas that I'm going to share here with you today, this morning, and tomorrow morning. My hope is that I'm going to encourage you, because chances are you're already doing a bunch of things right. So I hope that you don't think that I've come here today with any misconception that is an opportunity to, you know, put pieces back together, or, you know, this is not a reclamation effort. This is not hospice care. This is not, you know, that's not in my mind. So I hope you understand that my sense is that God is already doing great things here in your life. I want to encourage that. I want to encourage those great things that God is already doing. I also, though, want to spur you on. I want to stir you up to love and good deeds. I want to perhaps, even if you're open to it, and a number of you said things like you're wanting to learn, wanting to grow, wanting to learn new things, wanting to develop ideas about outreach and growth and different kinds of things like that. I want to be a part of that with you. And so there's a partnership between us here this weekend, as me with you, you with me. I want to encourage you, but I also want to challenge you a little bit. And if you'll allow me to, maybe even at times, to push you in your thinking a little bit, I can tell you that if you go into kind of openness, and really it's an openness that says, Lord, I'm ready for whatever you have for me. If you go into this weekend with that kind of an attitude, just watch and wait and see what God's going to do. Lord, I'm open to whatever you have for me. Would you just pause and just let me lead us in this kind of... Lord, we thank you for your presence here with us today. Thank you for this congregation of people, those that are here in this room right now, as well as those who aren't here just right at this moment. Lord, we thank you for each one that you have brought together, that you have knit together, and you're continuing to knit together to be Bangor Liberty Friends Church. Lord, I pray that you would help us to be open to whatever you have for us. Lord, help us to be open to whatever it is that you have for us. And then, Lord, I pray that you would help us to respond to you in faith and faithfulness and obedience and joy. Thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, bridges, you know, are some of the most fascinating structures, period, in the world. And yet they're also some of the most common. I didn't stop to count how many bridges we crossed from Haviland, Kansas to here. If I would have, I mean, I got to tell you, I would have needed something to keep track, because it would have been hundreds of bridges. They are ubiquitous. Every place that you travel in this country and world, and I've been to not every place in the world, but I've been to a lot of places, and there are bridges. They are some of the most common and yet fascinating structures ever built. They hold an important place in our lives, in our landscape, in our culture, in our commerce. They've influenced history. They will impact our futures. Battles have been fought. I mean, think about this. Battles have been fought. Treaties have been signed. Life and death decisions have been made while people have stood on the edges of a bridge. In 312 AD, the Milvian Bridge. Any of you happen to remember what happened at that bridge? Right outside of Rome? Constantine was on the march to overtake the city of Rome. Why was that so important? Well, at the Milvian Bridge, that is where his foe fell off and drowned. And because of that, he was able to take over the city of Rome, and arguably, not only Christianity was changed forever as a result, but all of world history. That is what led to Constantine's rise to ultimate power and the transition from dregs of the earth to prominent status for Christianity in the entire Roman Empire. The Milvian Bridge. In the early 20th century, Marcel Duchamp once said that America's only works of art are her plumbing and her bridges. I'm not quite sure what that says about the rest of our art, but anyway, significant. From the Brooklyn Bridge on the East Coast, the Golden Gate on the West, and everything in between, bridges not only provide assistance spanning a gap from one place to another, but they hold symbolic meaning. They evoke exhilaration and excitement and triumph and fear, sometimes all at the same time. I don't know if you've paid attention much to watching television commercials, TV shows. So many times they focus on a bridge. There's a bridge in the background of commercials, practically more than any other repeating kind of background. Some of you happened to watch the Olympics when they were in London. Was that just last summer? 2012? I think it was. And the opening sequence for the London Olympics, that is the airplane flying in, and it's the Tower Bridge. That was the symbol of everything. Bridges, they hold an important place in our imaginations, in our movies, from Bridge Over the River Kwai to Bridge to Terabithia. Do you remember It's a Wonderful Life, where George Bailey is standing when his world changes? He's on a bridge, jumping off. So here's a question. How many of you can remember when you were a kid, ever building a bridge of any kind. I mean, you know, popsicle sticks, could be something more substantial. Can you remember building a bridge? Any of you? A few of you? Two or three? Well, maybe as I'm talking, you'll remember it some more. But in my particular case, growing up, I loved building bridges. It seemed like the thing that I did a lot. When we would go to the beach, I would, you know, dig in the sand, and what was I doing? I was building bridges out there. One of the places that I really had fun building bridges outside, you know, in the house, you know, Lincoln Logs. Any of you remember those? Lincoln Logs, yeah. Building bridges with Lincoln Logs, other kinds of things so I could play with my cars. Always had to have a bridge, though, involved. One of the places that I had fun building bridges was near our home. I grew up in Newburgh, Oregon. My dad was at George Fox College back then, now university. And I built... I like to play back into the campus. Now the campus has sort of engulfed all of this, but right behind the campus was Hess Creek. Just a little creek that ran back behind the campus. Any of you ever been to Newburgh, by the way? Newburgh, Oregon? A few of you? Back behind is this creek, and it was all overgrown with stuff, and me and my buddies would go back there, and we would play. And one of the things, of course, we would do is end up finding, you know, rocks and falling down branches and, you know, just anything we could find. And that would be an activity. We'd spend all day building a bridge, and we'd go back to these places, and then somebody would inevitably tear it down, or something would happen, there'd be a storm, so then, you know, I have to build again. We had lots of fun building bridges over that place where I played. Well, years later, is when I was in high school, one of my all-time favorite bridges was built right at this location. Same place where I was playing as a kid. Now, this bridge, I know it doesn't look like very much, but it really serves an important function on the campus of George Fox University. Where the picture is taken from the orientation, it would be like we are standing in the main doors going into the gymnasium. A beautiful wood structure there. I mean, it's really gorgeous. And so it's like we're standing looking out. The way it's structured, the only place that they could figure out when they built this huge gymnasium to put the parking lot was on the other side of Hess Creek. So the parking lot for the gymnasium, for all the, you know, have 2,000-3,000 people showing up in the gymnasium, the parking is on the other side of the creek. So they had to build this bridge. So it's very functional kind of a bridge. And again, I know it doesn't look like much, but it's very important. Now, I know that there are a lot of people every day who scurry across that bridge. They are hurrying, they're thinking about other things, but if they took the time to slow down and gain a different perspective, to see that bridge from the perspective of the gap, they'd see something else. It is a beautiful bridge. I mean, it really is. I mean, even this picture doesn't quite do it justice. It is gorgeous. It is small but sturdy, humble yet magnificent and significant. You know, the ultimate purpose of every bridge is exactly the same. Whether we're talking about the Golden Gate Bridge or the Brooklyn Bridge or the Hess Creek Bridge, the ultimate purpose of every bridge is exactly the same. It's to connect two sides. It's to bring two sides together. It's to connect people. And so I want to invite you here today and tomorrow as well to slow down, to gain a new perspective, even of something that you're very familiar with. I mean, bridges, we're all familiar with those. What's the big deal? To slow down and to look again, to gain a new perspective from the perspective of the gap. So what is building bridges? What is up with that? What does that mean? Well, a few things. It is connecting two sides. Two sides of what? Well, it's people who are separated from God by a gap. We call that gap by a lot of things. We call it sin. We call it sinful man, holy God. Some of you are familiar, you grew up looking at booklets and studies like the Four Spiritual Laws or Billy Graham's Steps to Peace with God. Or if you think about it, a lot of the evangelism, I'll call them techniques or symbols or ways of communicating of the last 50 years have used bridges as a part of their illustration, that Jesus is the bridge. And so that's one of the kinds of gaps that we're talking about. And it's real. Make no mistake, it is a real kind of gap. There's another kind of gap. There's a gap that happens between people. And so there are both kinds of bridges connect both. People who are separated from God, and it's also people who are separated from one another, and people who are separated from one another who can also help to be bridge builders, helping, building bridges, so that people who are separated from God can reconnect with this God who loves them. So bridges, it is about connecting two sides. It's also rooted biblically. I mean, it's a great symbol and illustration. It's a great metaphor, but it's something that really comes out of Scripture. And so maybe you've looked at these passages before. This is 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 16 to 20. So from now on we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, so new perspective. We looked at it in the past from one way. Now look at it from another perspective, a different view. What about this perspective of the gap? There's something more going on. Well, if anyone is in Christ, creation has come, the old is gone. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ. Oh, good. I've got my Skype on, so you can see who else is going to be. You notice I've highlighted the words reconciled. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But look at how often the word reconciling, reconciliation, shows up here. Who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. The God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors. As though God were making his appeal through us, we implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. What does it mean to reconcile? It means to come back together. It means to connect. It's a bringing back together two sides that have been separated. For whatever reason, it's bringing those two separated things back together to reconcile. And when we think about reconciling in a marriage, we're going to reconcile. Two friends who have been at odds with each other, when they come back together, they've reconciled their differences. Reconciliation is coming back together. I want to suggest to you that word reconciliation or to reconcile is a bridge-building term. It means to connect. It's the same idea as building a bridge. And so here's a paraphrase of 2 Corinthians 5:18 that we've just looked at. That God built a bridge to us through Christ, and he gave us the ministry of bridge-building. What it says is that God reconciled. Let's go back to it again. I'm starting to confuse the paraphrase with the actual. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. And so here's the paraphrase again. That God built a bridge to us through Christ. It's a reconciliation. And he gave us, guess what? That exact same ministry. If you're having a conversation, maybe in a meeting of leaders or whatever, or just you're hanging out with friends, you're talking about the ministry of Bangor Liberty Friends Church, and you're saying, well, what is the heart? What is the root? What are we going to gather and unify ourselves around? What is that? I want to suggest to you this is a way to think about it. Because really, this is a God-given thing. That ministry is truly in bridge-building kinds of terms. It's rooted biblically. But it's also demonstrated currently. There's something about an ongoing present tense nature about it. Those of you who like baseball, do you realize that your favorite baseball player is only about as good as his last home run? You know what I mean? Have you noticed how people will boo their favorite guy? Yeah, and so what if he's batting 330 and has hit 25 home runs so far? If he's struck out the last 12 times in a row, you're not too thrilled. A lot of players feel, well, how about the way we're living and following and being faithful in our following of Christ? How about in those of you who are married, when is the last time you, I'm saying this to guys now, that you took your wife out on a date? Don't look at your husband now when I'm asking this, because that's really not fair to do. But you know, but the point is, it's an important thing to service the account. You know what I mean? To continue to keep it fresh and alive. And so bridge building, it doesn't matter. Yeah, well, we built a bridge back in 1927. Well, good for you. That's fantastic. But what have you done today? How are we living today? So demonstrated currently. And it's relationship oriented. It's not really about the thing. I mean, we're using the term here about building bridges, got lots of symbols, and even in a church, sometimes we can get hung up on our methodology or a program or, I mean, you know, there have been churches over the color of paint. And so the point is, we don't want to get hung up on the thing. It's about the people. It's relationship-oriented. It's about the people for whom Christ died. That's what we're talking about. And so even though I may be using this metaphor and talking with you about building bridges, and we start thinking about the thing, always remember that behind the thing of the bridge, it's about people. It's about ways to connect with people who've been separated from a God who loves them. You know, thinking about relationship-oriented, the Apostle Paul, he got this. If you want to look at one of the great bridge-building individuals in the history of Christendom, you don't have to look any further than your New Testament and the Apostle Paul. He saw the need and he lived it out. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 is one of those places where he talks about it. And you remember this passage. He says, "Though I am free and belong to no one, I've made myself a slave to everyone." Why? "To win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law." So he got it. He understood the theological implications, but he said, hey, it's about the thing. It's about the people, so that I can win those under the law. "To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak." Why? Well, again, to win the weak. "I've become all things to all people, so that by all possible means, I might save some." I'm just like you. I like the things that I like. I like my own comfort zone. I like the things that have worked for me in the past. I like the things I'm... And if my comfort zone and things I'm good at, you know, match up, even better. But the point is, it's even being weak that we can win some people. You know, might win some other people who are weak. By all possible means suggests that it's not about the thing, it's not about the method, it's not about the process, it's not about the bridge itself. The bridge is a means to something else. It's a means to winning people to Christ. It's a means to connect people with the God who loves them. Robert Lewis, in that Church of Irresistible Influence book, he put it this way. He said, "Although diverse, the bridge's metaphor shares a common theme. It really is human connection. And any bridge, either real or imagined, is useless unless one person moves toward another person." You can have the most shiny big church, you know, smack dab in the middle of Orange County, Southern California, and If you're not winning people to Christ, if you're not reaching people for whom Christ is saying. Later, I'm going to turn off Skype so you don't get to keep seeing my missionary friends. This one is in Lesotho, South Africa. The other one is in Ukraine. So, oh well. Moving toward another person. It is about people. He also said this. Today's church must once again become to every community a carefully crafted bridge if it expects to connect with real influence. Now, here's the sad part to this, and he expands on this in his book. And I just happen to agree that there are many churches in our world today that, frankly, they don't expect to have influence. They have long ago abdicated that role in society. They lament it, you know, to be sure. We read our newspapers, we see bad stuff going on, we talk with our neighbors, or actually maybe we don't talk with our neighbors. Why not? Because we don't expect to have real influence. So many have abdicated that role. Or, again, we remember the bridge built back in 1927, or whenever the year was, and we say, well, you know, we did our thing, now it's just not quite working anymore. And so we find different agendas. We find different purposes. You understand, church is one of the few institutions in the world that exists primarily for people who aren't a part of it yet. Have you thought about that? The church is one of the few institutions in the world that exists primarily for people who aren't a part of it yet. I mean, think about it this way. God is God. He could do it any way that he wanted to, right? He can do anything any way that he wanted to. And wouldn't have been it have been a whole lot more convenient for most of us if immediately we went to heaven? I mean, think of all the sin issues we could avoid. Think of all the temptation stuff we wouldn't have to deal with. Think of all of that. I mean, we would never have to talk about holiness stuff. Why? Because, you know, we're in heaven. We're saved. Boom. There we are. But God didn't do it that way. Why not? Well, when you boil it down, I mean, this isn't that particular lecture, that particular talk, but when you think about it, that's it. It's so that we can bring other people along on this journey with us. God has followers of Jesus Christ so that we can have an impact on those who aren't a part of his body yet. Something you can chew on that as you're eating lunch later today, a little bit. What else did Robert Lewis say? Here's one more quote for you, for right now anyway. He said, if the church functions with any other design than that of a bridge, it dooms itself. It implodes. Without its own bridges to the world, church life needs. Okay, this is stuff that we could spend a long time meditating on and talking about at our tables and other stuff. We're just not going to do that because time continues to go. But fades into isolation. Self-congratulation. You know any churches that have fallen into the trap, the pit of self-congratulation? And make no mistake, it is a pit. And then, finally, relevance. That's where it leads. When we're not building bridges, when we live in our castle and have our moat surrounding us and we pull up the drawbridge, guess what? We might be safe from the influences of the world, but we have decided we are no longer having an impact on the world. And you know what that is, ultimately? I mean, this is actually a wartime tactic. It's called a siege. And you know what happens, ultimately, eventually, to the people who live inside a fortified city at the end of a siege? They die. They die. They starve. They, unless they have, you know, a source of water, they die of thirst. They die. It becomes Masada. Just a little bit more prolonged as opposed to mass suicide. So that's the sobering part of what we're talking about. That's what we don't want to be. This country is littered with churches, though, that have fallen into that castle surrounded by a moat, pull up the drawbridge mentality. What God calls us to do is to let our drawbridges down, to build bridges. to make connections. You know, there are challenges to doing this, though. There are challenges to every bridge. And there's a little bit of a challenge that I'm going to enter into right now to try to show you a brief video of something that happened on May 23rd. That's not very long ago. Less than 2 months ago. And do I have control? Ah, okay. This is the Skagit River Bridge. I've traveled over many times between Portland and north of Seattle, between Seattle and Canada. If you're driving on I-5, you have to cross over this bridge. Watch what happened on May 23rd and the little explanation of this.
Working for you. Four News starts right now. Surveillance video captures the moment the Skagit River Bridge collapsed, sending three people into the icy water below.
It was like something out of a movie. There's just like a huge explosion of the ground on the bridge is falling into the water.
The news stories of survival and the inspection reports uncovered by the Coma 4 problem solvers that revealed the bridge's troubled history. A trucker hauling an oversized load smashed into the bridge's steel framework last night.
Seconds later, a 160-foot section of that bridge collapsed. One of three people who fell into the water is still hospitalized tonight. She's in stable condition. Federal investigators are now on the scene. Governor Inslee has declared an emergency proclamation for surrounding counties. He says repairing the bridge could cost $15 million.
We have a team of reporters on this big story covering the investigation, the bridge's troubled history, the survival stories, and the traffic nightmare.
Our coverage begins with Como 4's John Humbert, live along the Skagit River. John?
Well, guys, the scope of this collapse is just completely difficult to comprehend. State and national leaders are trying to figure out repairs for this bridge. You already see some of the work being done while the survivors in all of this feel grateful simply to be alive. Now, a surveillance camera from a nearby RV store captured the moment when the truck hit the bridge and the span then plunged into the water, a moment the three people who went with it will never forget. Bryce Kenning didn't expect the impossible.
And I tell you, it was probably the longest 45 minutes of my life.
Until it happened to him. The 20-year-old was driving northbound to a hockey game in Bellingham when a tractor trailer hit a top truss of the I-5 bridge.
The ground on the bridge is falling into the water.
Kenning kicked out windows of his car and climbed on top after plunging into that frigid water.
It was a huge impact, you know, and all the airbags went off and the cars started to rush with water. And that was when I kind of thought I wasn't going to make it.
He had a partner. Dan Sly and his wife tumbled down into the water in their truck. The two talked in order to keep calm. There was relief for him, too.
I mean, you're looking around, kind of pinching yourself and realizing you're lucky to be alive. It's a pretty amazing day.
All three were rescued safely, but this isn't the end of the story.
There will be many questions.
Today, elected leaders and first responders launched the full investigation. Governor Jay Inslee said the bridge did meet safety standards, but had a grading of 47 out of 100.
The term functionally obsolete basically means if it was built today, it would be built to different specifications.
No one will say it was the fault of the bridge, but they also won't say it was the fault of the truck driver who hit the truss.
This is just bad luck of where it hit and how it hit.
The 58-year-old bridge won't be fully replaced, but the state is planning to install a Bailey Bridge, similar to this one, over that fallen 160-foot section. That will be a short-term fix to get the highway open again. The NTSB is also starting a major investigation today. It will take a full year to complete.
That is not what we expect, and certainly not what travelers on the roadway are expecting from their infrastructure.
And those expectations still haunt Bryce Kenning.
I've been reliving this in my head a lot.
Believing luck, and maybe a little more, kept him alive.
Talk about counting your blessings. You must have some pretty good guardian angels, you know, watching over you.
Now, estimates peg the bridge repair at $15 million, but that could certainly change. The federal government has pledged an extra $1 million to that. And Senator Pat Murray said today, the check is in the mail. Reporting live on the Skagit River, John Humbert,
Coma 4 News. John is still
never heard that before, have we? Okay. And let's see if I'm still connected to this. Well, did you hear a couple of terms that they used in there? Functionally obsolete. Wondered how many churches would fall under that category of functionally obsolete. Did you hear that it met 47, it scored 47 out of 100. You know, I'm a VP of academics. I grade tests. Any of you in education ever get a 47 out of 100?
Hey, on a curve, that's a
C. On your class, doesn't it? Yeah, that's right. I mean, 47 out of 100 is what that bridge had. And here's the thing. On our way here, we were just doing some stuff on the internet and happened to notice that there are thousands of bridges in this country that are termed, that's a technical term, functionally obsolete, when it comes to the transportation departments in the different states. And that there are more bridges than you would want to know that fall into that category of functionally obsolete. What did they mean? How do they define it? If you noticed, he said, functionally obsolete means if we were to build it today, we would build it differently. Maybe. What about Bangor Liberty Friends Church? Don't answer, just think about it. Because that's one of those kinds of fresh and alive questions that we each need to ask. What about my own personal life and ministry? Here's the great thing. We serve a God of new beginnings and of fresh starts. Functionally obsolete. You notice they also said that particular bridge failure was no one's fault. Wasn't the fault of the bridge, wasn't the fault of the bus driver, I mean not bus driver, the truck driver who part of it just hit a little part of the bridge. I mean that is a freak accident for that to happen. Most churches don't just, boom, collapse. And yet, could it be that there's something more? Could it be that there are other ways? Could it be that there's some things that we need to look at, to retrofit, to help us to be more effective? So what is the starting point of this whole conversation about building bridges? Well, I'm going to suggest to you that the starting point is actually not what we do. We need to remember the ground of this, the basic beginning point, is really what God has done for us. It's God's bridge to us through Christ is the beginning point. And you know all of this, but just to remember that our sin is the thing that created the gap. You know Romans 3:23 and 6:23, that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and that the wages of sin is death. There really is a spiritual gap, a spiritual separation that is significant, profound, and it's an eternal kind of a deal. That is a part of why God has placed us here. That's that ministry and message of reconciliation that God has given to us. But Jesus died. Our sin created the gap. Jesus died to bridge it. The ultimate sacrifice that we celebrate every Good Friday and remember the resurrection and Easter, it's all about this. It's about bridge-building stuff that God did for us. If we want to get our motivation and our direction, if we want to follow a model for what is it that we should be doing in this world, it's not a bad one to follow. Now, most of us have heard about the Brooklyn Bridge. Any of you ever see it live? Seen the Brooklyn Bridge? A few of you? Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty cool-looking bridge. I mean, there are other bridges by today's standards that are more significant, with a wow kind of a feeling. But this bridge, I don't know if you know, it is the most photographed bridge in the world. And again, think back TV commercials, TV shows, and just people going there. Most photographed bridge. It was considered at the time it was built to be the eighth wonder of the world, built in 1883. Well, one of the two churches started what year? I don't remember. Okay, so you know, 30 years later, that bridge was built-ish. What you may not know is that that bridge was built with great personal sacrifice and personal cost. Its chief designer and engineer was a guy named Johann Roebling, and he died due to injuries on the job site. But rather than quit, rather than lay down the project because it was so dangerous, and it truly was, his son, Washington, took over the project. And his son later sustained some very serious injuries that left him partially paralyzed and deaf because of building that bridge. So those tragic accidents, and they were tragic, are really just a couple of the many personal sacrifices that went into the building of the Brooklyn Bridge. But there really is a difference between what they did, what the Roeblings did, Johann and Washington, and what Jesus did. The Brooklyn Bridge, it was built in spite of the sacrifice. The bridge that Christ built to us was built through the sacrifice, because of the sacrifice. It was not an accident. It was not an unfortunate casualty. It was a conscious decision that Christ made. The only way, he knew it was the only way to bridge the gulf. Why is that important for us to think about here today? Because the bridges that we built take some intensity. Yes, there is sacrifice. Yes, there is cost. There is. I mean, if you were hoping that I might be able to share with you some things here this weekend that would, you know, make bridge building easy. I mean, later this afternoon, we're going to talk about some things related to the topic of pain. Anyway, you've come to the wrong place because there's always sacrifice. I mean, ask Manny when he's training, you know, for his triple marathons. How many are you running? 10 marathons? Yeah, that's right. Whatever it is. There's, you know, there is that. I used to run cross country as well, and, you know, our coach, no pain, no gain. Okay, coach, great, thanks. There's some element of truth to that. Things that we really care about and are important, it's okay when there's some cost involved. So what is the significance of this for us? Understanding that Christ built this bridge, it's that we would want to walk across the bridge too ourselves and make sure that we have walked across the bridge that he built. That really is the starting point. That's the ground. And if you haven't walked across that bridge, you've been playing at church. Walking across the bridge is another way of describing having a real, vital relationship with the God who loves you. And it's once we have crossed that bridge, then that's what gives us that motivation to want to build bridges to others. So why is all of this important? We're going to come back to that in just a minute after we take a short break.